Welcome to the Hospitality Podcast.
Where's the lamb sauce?
Come on, man.
I just need a...
This is the lamb
sauce. Where's the lamb sauce?
Presented by Arthur Gomez.
God damn, I just spent $8,000 on some f***ing wine.
And Quentin Wind.
What are you?
An idiot sandwich.
So pour yourself a glass, because we're diving into the world of restaurants, kitchen, and bar. The Hospitality Podcast.
Welcome everybody to Breaking the Cork. Today, a new episode, always hosted by Quentin.
Welcome back, guys.
And myself. And today with us, we have a special guest. He's the bar manager of the Spy Bar at the Rafale Hotel. Welcome, Sotiris.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, pleasure. How are you doing? You all right?
Very good, very good.
Episode number 8.
The lucky eight.
Exactly. Basically, today, we're going to start, as always, with your background. You're a bar manager, professional of the bar. When did you start?
So I started in the bar industry, I would say, from 2016, officially.
Okay.
I used to be a lifeguard before, and there were some consultants coming at the bar and doing the trainings for the teams. That's where I really loved the bar, because they went behind the bar, they were very disciplined, they wanted certain things to be happening in a certain way. Mm. And I said, oh, wow, I really love this discipline. And I always liked as well kitchens, but what I didn't like about kitchens is I cannot have the communication with the guests personally. So when I saw that this discipline actually applies in the bar as well, then I got in contact with them to see if they're doing any trainings or if they have some seminars. And they did, actually. They did level 1 and level 2, which I went straight away in the city, because where I was working, it was in a countryside, let's say, in front of the sea.
So it was basically in Greece?
In Greece, yeah, where I'm coming from. I'm coming from Chalkidiki. This is North Greece.
I'm planning to go to Greece this summer, so we'll talk after.
Chalkidiki.
Okay. You don't have any choice.
So yeah, then I went to do some courses there, and then I went to get my first bartending job. I was working in an all-inclusive 5-star hotel. As you can imagine, I was very slow. The drinks were not in the greatest state. We're very clumsy when you're beginning.
Okay.
But then, yeah, obviously growing more, working more, gaining more experience. In 2019, I decided to come to London. Then I had the pleasure to start working at Galvin at Windows with French mentor, which is called Fred Siriex.
Yeah.
He was the general manager of Galvin at Windows restaurant. Obviously, I was working at the bar as a bartender. On the left side of the building, and that's how everything started for me in London. I consider myself very lucky that I was able to get that job and work with all those professionals, learn so many things, and obviously see the bar world, and more specifically hospitality, from a different angle. What is hospitality? Because in Greece we do really high volumes. Of course we're looking after guests, but here, due to the restaurant, which was a Michelin star one, the level was very high. So I saw different things. I saw, again, different discipline and a lot of rules. But you had, in a way, to translate everything not in a robotic way. Mm. You had to do it as Sotiris, as Arthur. So when I understood that, I loved everything about hospitality. I saw a completely different world and started enjoying my job so much. I was working so many hours as every professional in hospitality. But I was looking forward to go back to work and look after people, making drinks, and make everyone happy.
So you will say that the hospitality in Greece is a bit different than the one we have in UK, in London?
The hospitality in Greece, where I'm coming from, it was most likely high volume places, big beach clubs. Mm. You don't have the time, now that I'm here, I saw what London is all about. I can say that there we don't have the time really to do what we do here. Okay. However, everyone is serving with a big smile, the drinks are great, the qualities and everything are all top level. But yeah, it's completely different hospitality of the one that I believe we're providing in London. If I consider the seasonal jobs that we mainly had there.
Yeah, it's different mindsets anyway, so you're in Greece, the beach, the sun.
Yeah.
Whereas here in London, it's a bit more the busy and the buzz. Different. So
I think also maybe the type of customers you have. Like in London, we have so much different nationality, people coming from different country with different way of seeing the hospitality.
Yeah, it's the diversity in London is quite incredible. And when you came from Greece to London, what was the hardest thing for you to adapt to yourself to this hospitality?
So the hardest thing had to do with my team, to be honest, with the team that I was actually part of. First of all, it was introduced to me the role of the barback. In Greece, we never really had barbacks. We were doing everything. Everything we had to do, we were doing our own.
Okay.
And so when I found out what the barback is all about, is helping the bartender to refill ice, to refill the juices, to refill everything that you basically want, the fridges. While there was the rush time in the bar, I didn't had always the privilege to go back. And I didn't had that in my mindset as well, to go in the back and say, may I kindly ask you to bring me some apple juice? So I was going in the back and say, apple juice, please. Lemon juice.
Straight away.
Straight, yeah, because this is what I needed. And, and in front, it was madness, yeah? It was full of tickets and we had to do the service. And then, obviously, after 2-3 days, there were all the barbacks complaining about me to my colleagues, saying, this guy is very rude. And then I love the fact that a couple of my colleagues said, give him some time. He just came in London. He doesn't know how everything works.
Yeah.
And then when they told me, oh, this is what is expected from you, I didn't, I'm not sure if I didn't really like that. If I have the time to go back and say all that sentence, may I kindly ask you to please, then I take the apple juice myself, I go outside and I do the job. So that was one of the most challenging parts since I came in London until I adapt, because I think that adaptability is one of the biggest skills in hospitality and essential, I would say, as well.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
As you said, it's a multi-diverse city. People from all over the world are here. Every part of the world has his own
way of doing
things. So while we're in London, we have to adapt. Because if I do my way from Greece and someone does his way from France and someone does his way from Spain, then I think that we lost the game.
Yeah. did you travel a bit between the Greece and London?
Not at all. I've been once in Manchester one month before coming into London, just to see how is the city there, because I was considering, I had some friends there, so I was considering to go there.
I lived there for 6 months, so... It's a different city, but it's a good night out, actually. The hospitality scene over there is completely different to London. It's quite...
I'm not going to lie. As soon as I came to London, say, how did I consider to go there? But I haven't been there before. I haven't been to London before.
It's very different.
Actually, when I went there, I said, would London look like this as well? I'm not sure if I want to go. And then I came to London and it was all great.
It was very different
for me.
Yeah. As you were saying just before we start the podcast, you've been last weekend in Scotland, right?
Yes.
So you've been to Macallan?
Yeah, I had the pleasure to visit Macallan Distillery for the 200 years anniversary. They had a show as well that was custom made for the Macallan from Cirque du Soleil. Yeah, incredible experience. Incredible, yeah.
How many days you stay?
Just one.
One day.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So we went in the morning and then we had a tour of the distillery. We walked around the estate. Then we had dinner and we went to see the show.
Oh, that's good. Did you try any?
Yeah, we tried some very, very rare drums, which were incredible.
Yeah?
Incredible, yeah.
Is it one of your favorite whiskey?
Yeah. It was since Greece. I mean, when I have been introduced to Macallan in Greece, I loved it since the beginning. Then obviously I came here, I saw the brand, and I had the opportunity to work with them before Raffles as well.
In your bar, you have some of the whiskey.
Yes.
Yeah.
At the Spy Bar now we have quite a few expressions, but the most rare, I would say, is the Globetrotter case that we have from James Bond. So they did a collaboration between Macallan and James Bond. So they did six expressions of James Bond whiskey.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Or is it single malt? Or?
All of them, of course.
Okay. So how's the selection, you will say, of spirits you have at the moment at the raffle, at the Spy Bar?
So we have, I believe we have a very good selection of spirits in general. We have a big selection of whiskey and we are working with all brands. So we have some that we work with them for their sustainable practices, like Sapling and Glass Half Full as a distributor. Then we have, of course, some expressions from Diageo, from Edrington brand, which is Macallan as well, and some Japanese spirits.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the highlight is the vintage spirits that we have from bygone eras, I would say. We have a cognac from 1800s.
Oh my, 1800.
Yeah.
Wow. What's the price for it? I think we asked the same question.
Yeah, we do serve a cocktail with it. It's called Sazerac de Forge.
Okay.
And we do a vintage Sazerac with it, which in the menu we have it at £2,000.
£2,000 for
one cocktail.
Yeah.
Wow.
How many do you sell a week of these?
We haven't sold one.
Oh, yet. Okay. That was my next question.
It won't be the bestseller, but.
Well, we'll put it in the reel, actually, this one, because
at the raffle, with the type of clients you get, I'm sure one day someone's going to take it for sure.
In yeah, I mean there are some other hotel bars with that they have this cognac, and they the price is three times ours. We have it at that price because we want guests to experience it. We want guests to, to drink a cognac from 1800s.
Yeah, and what do you reckon if, okay, if one of the customers goes to one of your bartenders, do you think all of you are going to fight for who's going to make it?
Yeah, I think that would be between us. Yeah, it would be an internal fight.
It's like
yeah,
football, who's going to take the penalty?
yeah. My responsibility will be for sure to open the bottle.
Okay.
And then they can do it. I'm happy for them to do it. They would be way more excited than I would be.
That's true. And so in terms of cocktails, can you explain a bit to us, how's your list of cocktails? Do you have any focus maybe on certain spirits?
Yeah,
flavors.
So the cocktail menu of the Spy Bar is inspired from the history of the building. Obviously, the building was operating as a Ministry of Defense from World War One to World War Two, and so on. It's a building with a massive history, so we take inspiration from all those histories that the building has to give us, and we doing cocktails. An example would be the whiskey mouthwash. Mm-hmm. Winston Churchill was consuming before 12 lunchtime two whiskey sodas, so we take two Johnny Walker actually with soda.
Okay.
So we take inspiration from that highball, and we're doing it our own way. Of course, we are using innovative techniques and machines such as centrifuge and rotary evaporator to distill and extract flavors. But all the inspirations are, of course, from the stories of the building.
From the story. That's funny what you're saying about Churchill, because Paul Roger will have a cuvée Winston Churchill, who is like the vintage cuvée of Paul Roger. And I heard that he was consuming every morning, apparently, as well. A pint of champagne.
No.
He was fan of champagne.
Champagne, so, cognac, whiskey.
That means before noon, it's a pint of champagne and two whiskey. Nice, nice. Okay, so really, okay, focus on the classic spirits. How's your list? Pretty long, or you mentioned like quite a short list?
We have 16 cocktails in the list. Three out of those 16 can be served as well as alcohol-free version. And of course, our highlight cocktail is the Signature Vesper, which has been created when our lovely agent, Bond, said three parts of gin, one part of vodka, and half part of Quina Lillet.
Yeah, the Vesper.
Shaken, not stirred.
Okay.
So yeah, this is the iconic drink now as well for our bar. A bit elevated. We've been original to the recipe, of course, and to the way that it's created, because we were very confident that there would be so many guests coming inside the Spy Bar and would say, oh yeah, shaken, not stirred. And they were ordering straight away our signature Vesper. So the recipe for us is the number three gin.
Yeah.
We're doing it with a distillate of honey. The idea behind this was that everyone is using honey as a sweet part, to sweeten cordials. And so we said, what if we distill the honey and we actually take all the flavors of the honey in a dry way? We distill the honey and came out very, very, very nice for us. And then we have the vermouth, which is cooked with some British herbs, such as elderflower and fennel pollen. Mm. And we're using as well some quassia bark to bring back the original bitterness of the Quina Lillet, which from, I think, if I'm not mistaken, from 1970s is not anymore in the market.
That means you have a big prep for all the cocktail, of the cocktail?
Yeah, yeah. Majority of our cocktails have at least two preps. That's the minimum.
Any chance you can explain to the listeners what exactly you're doing for the prep? How many times you do the prep? Who's doing the prep exactly in your team?
The ideal goal will be to have a person that will be the head of preps to do all the preps, because there are quite a lot. Considering we have 16 cocktails, two preps per cocktail, we're talking about 32 preps. Mm. And with the volumes that we do, you need someone to be there and do preps always. So the preps involving equipment, different equipment that we have in the lab. We have a designated area that we do all the preps, as we call it the lab. And we have the privilege to have really everything we need. It will be a playground for a passionate bartender to be there and experiment. From the rotary evaporator, which is a modernized distilling machine, to the centrifuge, then to sous vide, vacuum, carbonation system. We have everything that we really do. What we really like to do is to use fresh ingredients. So we get fresh herbs, fresh fruits, and then we are processing depending on what we want to achieve.
Okay.
So for example, the apples. If we take the apples, then we juice them, we get the water out of it, and the apples, because they contain quite a lot, if we just filter it through a coffee filter, we get the clear, clarified apple juice, apple water, the way you want to call it. And then we're rectifying this with the acids and sugars depending on what we want to do. Mm. Then as you have this, potentially we could add some water and carbonate the whole thing, so then you come up with a green apple soda. Mm. and so on. So depending on what we want to achieve, we're using the ingredients, fresh ingredients, to
amazing
to get to the level that we want. Yeah.
And how many? So you said you do quite a lot of cocktails on your busiest nights. How many cocktails do you think you make?
More than 250.
250 per night.
Even more. Yeah.
So what's the vibe at the Spy Bar? Is it more like a hidden gem, a festive bar?
Yeah, the Spy Bar is definitely a hidden gem.
Yeah.
It's hidden within the depths of the old war office. As soon as you are coming in the last floor of the original building, which is the basement one, B1, it's just another door. So as soon as you come down and you see the doors, we have the meeting rooms there and some storages, but all the doors, including the one of the Spy Bar, is just another door, just a brown door. So you don't know that it's there.
Okay. Is it the original door? Or no,
they didn't. No.
Obviously, yeah.
The only original at the moment down there is the ceiling and the brick walls, which we have maintained as it used to be back in the days.
Yeah.
So that brings a lot of intrigue. As soon as you're coming down, you say, "Where do I go now? Is this a bunker, or where do I go now?" And then in the corner is hidden the Spy Bar. It has very low lighting.
Yeah.
From 5 to 8, I would say the music is a bit more blues, more jazzy, more dark and soft and nice. From 8 onwards, we want people to vibe, because in the end of the day, people are going in bars to have fun, to enjoy their night, enjoy the drinks, of course, but have a vibey place with nice music. So it's a bit more funky, a bit more pop, a bit more electric blues, I would say.
Okay.
But then it's made very nice. So inside is, I'm not going to tell you the color of the brick wall. You should come and you will see.
We will definitely come.
But there is a very nice brick wall, lots of spotlights in random places that creates that sort of intrigue and mystery. Then behind the back bar is hiding something as well that is just incredible. It's the wow effect. As soon as you enter the venue, is the wow effect.
Oh, I'm looking forward to go, actually.
I like that. Yeah. To be fair, I can't wait to try the cocktail and to see the place. It looks like so interesting to be like in the Raffel with this huge luxury hotel, and you're looking for a bar with no Instagram account, with no communication. As you told us before the podcast, you can't take any pictures in your bar.
Yeah, we have a no camera policy. So we want people to come at the bar and experience it themselves. It belongs to the speakeasy category bars. It's a proper speakeasy because you cannot find it if you don't know how to get there. We use actually some stickers to cover the cameras of the guests as soon as they enter.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We can see that as soon as we put the stickers in the phone cameras, they are coming inside. They don't really care to take a picture of the drink or of the bar. Mm. They just leave the phone and they start talking to each other,
which
I know it sounds usual, but it's not actually that much today.
Yeah,
as soon as you go in a cocktail bar, the first thing you do is to take a video of the vibe and then, what an incredible drink. I take a picture of the drink and that's it.
Yeah.
But you cannot see anything. You cannot see the menu. You cannot see the drinks.
And obviously now, like you just mentioned that the cameras, obviously there's a sticker, so you can't take videos or pictures. Do you have any like staff party where actually it went a bit wild because obviously you can't take any pictures? There's no recording. Has that happened?
Not yet. I'm not sure what the future is hiding, but no, we haven't had a staff party at the Spy Bar that things went wild. And
when you're talking about staff party, you mean staff party for the staff
Sorry, Spy Bar? Not your staff party. As in the company could reserve.
They are respecting the policy.
Yeah. Okay.
That's a good question, actually. Can you book the whole bar for a night or an event?
Yeah, 100%. Okay. From Tuesday to Saturday, which we are open 100%, Sunday, Monday, depending on the occasion and the budget.
We were talking just before we started, and you mentioned that all the staff members get Sunday and Monday off, so it's closed, which is...
That's actually very cool. Yeah. But I feel like now it's very common in the hospitality scene to have the Sunday, Monday off.
Yeah. It depends on the business and your location and all that, yeah.
Yeah, obviously, if you're a bakery and you close on Sunday.
Yeah.
I think this is a bit of the effect of COVID as well.
Yeah.
With COVID, obviously, let's say within five, six years, you became manager of a top bar. So it's not very far off, is it? As a bartender, you can really go up the ladder quite quickly.
100%. But I believe that in my case, for example, I was sure that I want to work in hospitality and I was very committed to grow and progress within hospitality. Yeah. So as soon as I came in London as well, I started in a university. I finished business and hospitality management and I was ready and I'm still ready to sacrifice everything for hospitality, which is as well quite rare.
Yeah, it is,
out there today. Or again, if exists, it exists in higher roles. So I was working in Hilton, I was for 2 years. I was working 5 days a week, as everyone, of course. And obviously we were doing a lot of hours, and every night as a supervisor, when I got my first promotion, I was doing the closing. I didn't complain a single day why I'm doing the closing.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wanted to learn. I wanted to be there with the team. I wanted to be until the end. Obviously, I sacrifice things, and I'm very lucky. I'm happy to say that my partner has supported me a lot until today. That in Hilton, because she has a morning job.
Okay.
In Hilton, I was working from 3 until 3 in the night. And yeah, we couldn't see each other whatsoever.
Yeah.
And obviously, hospitality, you don't take, back in then, at least, you were not taking Saturday, Sunday off. Mm. Maybe one Sunday, but is it enough? But she knew that, she supported me, and I'm very happy for this. But I think that today, this as well is rare.
Yeah, completely.
Is your partner part of the hospitality scene as well?
No,
or she, not at all.
If it was, it would be easier,
yeah,
I would say.
Sure. Yeah.
To come back to your point, I believe that everyone can do it in 5 or 6 years or 4 years potentially, become a manager. But I think that he has to sacrifice a lot, and he has to work very, very hard to get there.
Yeah. I think it's not only hospitality, to be honest. I think in all kind of jobs, that's the way of working. And yeah, the more you work, obviously, the more you work, better you're going to get, and the furthest you're going to get. But yeah, it doesn't come easy. It doesn't drop from the
and
sky,
and at the same time, you need some luck.
Yeah,
luck is a very important factor.
Yeah. But not just
hard work.
Do you believe in luck? That's a question I like to ask.
I think from business perspective, you need to have some luck. I also believe that you're not sitting in a chair and then someone is knocking your back and you're done. You have to chase your luck, as we say in Greece.
Yeah.
So if you work hard and you chase your luck, then for sure you will get there.
I like to say you need to provoke it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So that you have more chances, the odds are on your side rather than
completely.
And obviously in the 10 next years you're going to be able to achieve bigger things, probably go a bit higher in the hierarchy. What do you think about working in private members clubs?
It's not my cup of tea. I like to see every day different people, and that's something that you can achieve in hotels and in bars in around London. Even though I respect private members club, I don't think that is for me.
Yeah.
I don't think it's my cup of tea.
I've got a couple of friends who worked in those, and the things they told me, oh my God.
I'm sure their experiences that they have to share are quite unique.
Yeah. I was very shocked by what they told me, and it doesn't sound like the best place to work. And like you say, it's serving the same people, and it's people with a lot of money. I guess you can have obviously the very nice ones, but you've got also the ones that are very...
Demanding.
My sister's boyfriend, he stopped working one of them because of one experience, and it was the owner of the club who came down to eat and came with his friends and his two dogs and ordered food for him and obviously for his dogs. When he received the ducat, he knew that, because he always comes with his dog, so he knew that he was going to cook those really expensive steaks. I think it was ribeye or something like that. It was quite expensive. So he cooked and served it as usual. And obviously the dogs get it served on a proper, probably £50 plate. And the waiter goes, and 2 minutes later, the waiter comes back with the plate. And he said, the owner just shouted at me that the meat wasn't cut in small pieces. It was too big for the dogs. So he had to take it back and cut every single piece.
There are some demands which are, I think, above hospitality.
You always have demanding clients.
Of course.
The place. Yeah, I don't think you need to be in very luxury venue.
No, of course.
To have this kind. But obviously, in a venue like a private members club, you can have some crazy demand.
Yeah,
makes sense.
Definitely is. Have you had any experience where you had a customer that was very demanding?
Yeah, I did have. In 2017, I was working in a 5-star luxury hotel in Greece. And 90% of our clientele were coming from Russia. Now, that being said, Russian guests, at least the ones that I was serving in the hotel, they were very, very demanding, but very rewarding at the same time. As soon as you were meeting his expectations, then he was the greatest guy you ever met. At that level, that's acceptable. So yeah, the craziest story is that he was making us running up and down for every single thing. Obviously, when we had those sort of guests, then we were making sure that only one person is in charge for that table or that umbrella, if you want, by the beach or wherever he was sitting by the restaurant. Yeah, he was making us run like chickens all day long. But then before he was going, he was going at every department. He was taking everyone, all the team outside of the bar, putting us in a line and giving £100 to 100 euros tips to everyone, saying thank you so much. This is something that you don't quite often see, because there are guests that they are complaining for potentially getting something complimentary, an extra night or a glass of champagne. But there were guests that they were demanding, because this is the way they like it, because they expect that from a five-star luxury hotel in Greece back then. But then they are there as well to tell you, thank you so much for looking after me. Everything was perfect.
They appreciate the
the
service. Makes sense. Do you, in Greece, do you have like a service charge, or the tips is not included in the service?
No, not at all. Unfortunately, I believe they will start implementing soon a discretionary 10%.
Okay.
But that's not there yet. If they give you cash tips, then...
Okay.
What do you think the reaction is going to be from the Greek people when they implement it?
I think it depends on the venues that they will implement it.
Yeah.
In smaller cities, I think they should not, because they might lose business.
Yeah.
If it's not part of the culture, it
in France,
sense.
If they implement it in France, cars are burning in the streets.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago, I was in Prague, in Czech, and they do have the same. They do have a 10% service charge. Yeah, obviously, if you want, you place it. It's not straight away in the bill. But then they ask you as well as soon as they come.
Yeah.
And obviously, coming from, allow me to say, from a culture of London, that we pay service charge of 15% everywhere. Mm-hmm. And they are asking me, should I include the 10%? Automatically, I would say yes.
Yeah.
Unless something was very, very wrong in the food or in the... In the service. But I'm surprised that actually, now that you said that, I was in Paris a month before with my family, and I didn't spot any services, which was...
Yeah, but that only got worse since the at least for the UK, they've implemented, so you have to, by law, the company has to declare the tips, so for tax purposes. So,
but in UK, you always used to have the service charge, not if I'm
right. Yeah, but you always had a service charge. But back, I think before COVID, I think 2018, the tips weren't taxed.
Yeah, so you're right. Yeah.
And now any cash needs to be declared, and that obviously changes the whole game, because you're taxing 20% on the service, which is completely ridiculous. But yeah, there you go. They still whereas before the company could take a cut.
Yeah,
and I heard some companies, they took 70% for themselves, and it's stories where you hear the owner say, why should I not take a cut? It's my restaurant.
This law is really good in terms of, it's your employee, your waiters, your bartenders, your sommelier who's working on the floor, so gaining these tips. And usually the owner is not working directly on the floor. Mm. It's more like as a back office. A lot of owners used to keep a lot for themselves as tips. If you're keeping more than 50% and you're not on the floor, it's not very fair for the team.
I know some day, but it's to repay the broken glasses from the staff. If you had young people right now who would like to have your journey, the journey you've had, what would you recommend them in terms of advice that you can give?
Find the right business. Be committed, prepared for everything, and resilient.
Okay.
I think hospitality is one of the hardest jobs. It requires to have a lot of skills that you only earn while you are working hard. For example, anticipation or perception, there are things that you cannot develop by reading a book. You have to be in action to experience it and find out the right way
to take action
next time, let's say.
Yeah.
But you need to be really resilient and very, very hard work. Very hard work. I think it's one of the... I don't understand as well why it's not considered a high-skilled job, right?
Yeah,
I
mean, for the bike seat, you mean?
Yeah. I think it's one of the jobs that requires so many skills that you need to have at the same time, multitasking and making people happy at all levels. And I would encourage him to go into hospitality, because I think that it's one of the most beautiful jobs you can do.
Mm.
You make people happy. We are getting pleasure because we make people happy. It's a job that you can apply your creativity. I know not everyone is creative, but even if you are not creative, you can be creative enough in your service.
You can express yourself. Yeah.
Exactly. Express yourself and make others happy.
Yeah.
You get to know people, you get to travel a lot, you get to meet different people from different cultures, engage with them, and every day you can become wiser. Every day you're learning something.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's an incredible job, and I would highly encourage everyone to go and work in hospitality, even though it's very hard again, and you need to be very, very patient and resilient. Yeah.
If you really want to involve and, like you said, travel, meet people, and learn new stuff, that's for me. That's one of the biggest plus in hospitality is meeting the variety of people. You never know who you're gonna serve.
So yeah.
And that person can open doors for you, and it could be huge doors, or it can just be the very nice person having nice conversation that you're gonna talk to once a month because he comes once a month.
Yeah. But the opportunities as well that you can have.
But yeah.
Meeting every day new people is a new opportunity to achieve something or to get somewhere.
It's incredible.
And there are so many bartenders today that they were working at the bar serving people. They were doing what they love doing, which is looking after guests. And then these people today are, let's say, their investors. They open restaurants and bars and hotels and I don't know what for them to run because they saw their passion.
Yeah, completely.
So there are jobs that they have different opportunities, but in hospitality you face it every day. Yeah. Every day you are in service is a great opportunity.
Did you get that? Someone that came and approached you and say, you know what, I love how you work. I love your how you are. I'd like to open a bar with you.
Yeah.
So you had.
Yeah, yeah. It's happening. Yeah. Because you do every day what you love doing.
Yep. Yeah.
It's just to understand that what you do is all about the guests and is all about hospitality. It's all about how you're making people feel. As they were saying in my first job very, very wisely, a great cocktail or a great dish cannot save a bad service. But a terrible food or cocktail can be saved by a phenomenal hospitality.
Yeah.
Right?
100% true. Yeah.
Is there one person today you will say a big thank you from the trade, from the hospitality?
There is one, yes.
Yeah.
That is called Gilles Louis. He's a gentleman that currently he's an F&B manager in a hotel outside of London, closer to Reading. And he was the assistant general manager at Galvin at Windows. And I consider him my mentor.
Gilles, big up. That's nice. We have a little surprise. It's Quentin surprise, actually, but we're going to try something quite new.
Yeah, I hope
if Quentin, you want to pour the drinks.
So,
wanted to explain? I can pour the drinks if you want.
I'm not going to actually explain too much, but if you want, I don't know if Jensen's Gin.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so you do know them. They are literally just two arches down to us, our neighbor. And they come quite often to have a coffee here. And we just discussed on how we could actually do a collab. We're going to make you try something and see whether or not you can taste it. And we've done that with, who did we do that?
Florian.
Oh yeah, Florian. Tell me what you think.
Is this
just by the nose?
Has nothing to do with the gin, it's just the bottle, or is
it
gin-based something?
It is gin-based something, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We did the experience with Florian Thiraud, who used to be the head of mixology at the Peninsula, who is now in US, in the States.
Another one that went to the US. There
that's true. Yeah.
Florian.
Yeah.
Okay. This is tasty. Mm. It reminds me a lot of salted caramel.
Yeah.
You know those caramels? Same. Those. Does it contain? I think it has something buttery, scotch. How do you call that? Butterscotch.
Mm.
I get a lot of butterscotch flavors.
Yeah.
Very silky texture, very nice.
I'll give you a little clue. We're a bakery.
Bravo.
It's relative to the venue.
Makhleb.
No, it's a product that we do. We're a French bakery.
What is croissant?
There you go.
This is it's macerated, right?
So it's left for, it's a croissant that has been overcooked and then left into gin for 7 days. No, it's 10 days for the second batch, 10 days, and obviously filtered after.
So all these flavors are coming just from the, without any process, macerate only, just leave it there. And
exactly.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, salted butter is the first thing that it came. So
there you go, yeah. And it's quite on point, to be honest, because it's literally, that's what you get.
It's interesting, yeah.
Yeah, it's something. Nice. Yeah, and it's something we wanted to do to develop here and reconstruct our products. So like a pain au chocolat, obviously we would mix it with chocolate liqueur and maybe other stuff. And we wanted to replicate maybe an almond croissant or a pain au raisin.
Yeah.
And just, reconstruct into a cocktail.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well done, huh?
Oh, I think it was I didn't do much. I just provided a croissant. But it's quite interesting, isn't it?
But if the croissant was not good, then that wouldn't be good either.
Thank you.
I think we're going to finish with this nice one.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you very much, Satiris.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much for your time. It was a really good time today.
It went quick.
Do you have maybe a last word?
Last word is to see you at the Spy Bar and encourage more people to work in hospitality.
Exactly.
That's the last words.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Thank you guys.
Thanks for having me.
See you soon. Bye-bye. The Hospitality Podcast.